Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Virginia Priest from Brooklyn, New York, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Thank you so much, Virginia. It's fantastic to have somebody from around here, where we're recording the Tennis Podcast right now in New York, introducing this edition, the final edition of the US Open Dailies. And Virginia became a friend of the Tennis Podcast at the intro level. You can do the same. If you'd like to, go to our friends link in our show notes and you'll be able to introduce a show, request a shout out at the end of the show, and just generally get access to the 20 podcasts that we've already recorded over the course of the last 10 months. They include the Juan Martín Del Potro story, the Tracy Austin story that we did a couple of weeks back, loads more. And this week alone, we're going to be recording our review show in a couple of days' time. We've got a Q&A coming with friends of the Tennis Podcast, Catherine, Matt and myself, answering friends' questions. That's coming up next week. And also, even tomorrow, we've got one for you. That's my diary of the US Open. Also, don't forget our competition. You could be in with a chance of winning a trip to the Australian Open in January if you're a friend. Throughout the US Open, we've been brought to you in association with AO Travel, who provide the Australian Open experience the easy way. With AO Travel, you can create your own package of tickets for the days and sessions and courts of your choosing at the 2023 Australian Open. They'll look after your flights, your accommodation, premium experiences such as wine tasting, behind-the-scenes tours, even a Rod Laver Arena walk-on experience. So go to ausopentravel.com, that's ausopentravel.com, for details on how to get the best of all of it. Best tennis, the best in Melbourne, and it's all in one place. Faff free. And don't forget, that one lucky friend of the Tennis Podcast is going to win a pair of incredible AO travel packages to go to the Australian Open themselves in January. You'll receive an array of tickets over the middle weekend. You'll get two return economy flights. You'll get accommodation and you'll get a premium experience. All closes on September the 16th, so that's Friday. Keep an eye out for our newsletter to enter. Or if you're already a friend and you don't get the newsletter for whatever reason, email us, friends@tennispodcast.net, and we'll send you the link. Catherine, it's been quite a day.
Yeah, even more so now. That was like Mohamed Layani conducting a coin toss.
I'm going to say that as a compliment,
lots
Matt.
Lots of admin.
Yes, lots of admin.
Yes, I feel like Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic after the 2012 Australian Open final, waiting for Kia Guy at the Australian Open.
Mr. Cho.
Yeah.
To finish his speech.
Indeed.
Although I am sitting down, and they were requesting chairs then, weren't they?
You are. And actually, I think we all need seats, and Casper Ruud and Carlos Alcaraz need seats after today. I mean, it wasn't a match of that length. But we've got it on the TV right now, and the intensity of the rallies, the relentlessness of it all. I mean, it was one heck of a match, and I know it was only four sets in the end, but it was hard fought, and Carlos Alcaraz is a winner. I mean, what a story. He's the youngest world number one ever in men's tennis.
Yeah, it's a lot to process, isn't it? It's, we've talked for so long now about the curve that he's been on, and and ahead of for so long. I can see Matt's already doing a slightly smug little smile, so I feel like we should just get the inevitable out of the way. And Matt should have to read out what he tweeted tonight and just own it, Matt. Own your smugness.
Yeah.
Front up.
I agree.
Well, I said to you, I'm only smug on Twitter, and now you're making me do it on the podcast. But anyway, I will. Fine. So I tweeted in February 2018, I saw this kid play in Barcelona last year. Blew my mind a little that someone could be that good at 13. He's now got his first ATP point. And that, of course, was about Carlos Alcaraz. So tonight I tweeted, I saw this guy play in New York tonight. Blew my mind a little that someone could be that good at 19. He's now got his first Grand Slam title and the number one ranking.
Very clever, isn't
it? It's too good. It's hard to give him a hard time over that, isn't it? Because it's actually quite good.
The thing is, what I will always say about this, it was a true right place in the right time situation. Because honestly, anyone could have watched Carlos Alcaraz in 2017 and thought, that guy is amazing. He was just amazingly good.
Could you tell that everybody around you was thinking that?
Oh, yeah.
Are there other tweets out there in the ether from people that were there that day?
I hope so.
Also feeling smug. I've just made you quote yourself quoting yourself.
I hate you a little bit right now.
Right. Let's move it on to talk about what happened tonight. Because, I mean, You two picked that score, didn't you, and that result. Is that right?
Yes, you're teeing me up to be smug now. Well, yes, I did. Yeah, those are my parting words on before jogging off into the New York night yesterday. Alcaraz in four.
But yet it still was quite precarious, I thought. I mean, we've just watched the third set tiebreak. Now, throughout that third set, so the story of the match is Alcaraz wins the first set 6-4, and then he has a real low, an energy low, and the opposite's happening to Ruud. Ruud's playing well. He wins the second set 6-2. The third set is the heart of the match. I'm not saying that's the turning point in terms of if Ruud had won it, Alcaraz wouldn't have come back. He might have done. But once Alcaraz had won a set that at times he was second best in. He was having, again, he looked like he almost needed some chocolate or something to just get him going. I mean, hardly surprising after three successive five-set matches. But, I mean, were either of you thinking this could be Ruud's now in that third set? This, the whole thing?
Honestly, no. I don't think there was ever a point in the match where I would have put Ruud's win probability, to use a very du jour turn of phrase, higher than Alcaraz's. Obviously, there were moments in that third set when I rated Ruud's chances more highly than at other points in the match, for sure. But there was never a moment where I thought, in your words, David, this could be Ruud's. I mean, obviously, at any stage, it could have been Ruud's, but I was always feeling Alcaraz tonight because, yes, he had that energy dip and a few lulls, but basically he showed up, Carlos Alcaraz. He showed up, he wasn't paralysed by nerves and occasion and the momentousness of it all. He wasn't paralysed by the stakes. And P.S., neither was Casper Ruud, but take away all of that, Alcaraz is a better tennis player. It always felt like that was pretty much what it would come down to tonight. It felt like a tennis match, really. And Alcaraz, according to the rankings, and I know there are asterisks next to them at the moment, but he's a better tennis player than anyone. And if he shows up... By showing up, I don't mean he played his best tennis. I don't think he did, but... He was on it enough tonight to make it about just being a better tennis player, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too. I enjoyed the match a lot. I mean, when it was good, it was really, really good. And it was interesting to compare this US Open final to Team Zverev of a couple of years ago, where it was an opportunity for both of them to win their first Grand Slam title. I know that was played in extraordinary circumstances with no one in the stadium, but it was super tight, wasn't it, both of them. This one, they were able to, as you said, be more of themselves on the court, and I thought some of the rallies were absolutely thrilling and dynamic. And actually, what was interesting is that Ruud was winning a lot of the highlight reel points, you know, the sort of Alcaraz points that we've come to expect. It was Ruud who was winning them. If I were Ruud, I would have a regret about the start of the third set, because he just won the second. As you said, Alcaraz was looking a little fatigued, and he immediately went down a break at the start of the third. He got it back, but that was a chance maybe to stretch ahead. And then the tie break, because he played an absolutely horrible tie break. Shanks, forehand misses. It was a real shocker. He handed it to Alcaraz. But the key moment probably was the game right before the tiebreak, when Ruud did have some set points. And, well, I mean, Carlos Alcaraz came to the net to save both of those set points, and that was a real feature of his play tonight, how willing he was to come forward, how bold he was on big points. And he saved them. You know, Ruud didn't lose them. Alcaraz saved them with great play, with some volleys, and that was the match right there. And Alcaraz stepped up.
I know there's such a fine line between bravery and stupidity or foolhardiness, but on one of those set points when he served and volleyed, the previous point that he'd lost to set up Reed's set point, he had served and volleyed and been passed handily by Casper Ruud on the forehand. So for him then to think, okay, fine, you got me that one time, you're not getting me again. Maybe that's just being 19, but I don't think that's what
he believes
like
in
for
that,
me being 19.
He believes in that style of play. It's part of his DNA as a tennis player. I always remember when you first put him on our radar, Matt, all those years ago. You would seek out any match he was playing on TV. I remember there was a period where I think he had a run. Was it a tournament like Rio or someone like that?
Rio 2019.
Yeah, and I just remember you saying that he's just done a kick serve and he's just gone hurtling into the net to serve and volley, and it was really sort of surprising to see it, because you just, you know, I thought he was a clay courter. I didn't know he would do all that. And you described it, and I thought, really? You know, is that just panic? And it's not. It's part of who he is as a tennis player.
He's always said, hasn't he, I am like Roger Federer. I'm not like Rafael Nadal. I mean, obviously, he embodies a good amount of the Rafael Nadal spirit. But in terms of the tennis, he's you know, he's not Roger Federer. But that's who he's modelled his tennis on.
Yeah, he's so keen to attack and get forward. And those things do remind me of Federer. And I love how willing he is to come forward and how good he is at the net. I think that separates him from a lot of the other young players we've seen come through. We've often talked about Rublev maybe not having the skills in the forecourt. Zverev and Tsitsipas even, I think, covers the net well, but maybe doesn't have the great volleys. But Alcaraz is just brilliant at the net, and he wins so many points with hard volleys. You know, those skills he's developed help him win points. And I must say, Ruud today as well, I thought, volleyed really well. It was a really nice element of the match, both players hitting volleys and hitting them well.
Do you think the crowd were aware of what they were witnessing in Alcaraz? Do you think that they're looking at somebody who they're going to be seeing do this many times over?
Yes, the feel I got from the crowd was that they were all very excited about being able to say in 15 years' time, I was there when he won his first.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes from last year in a way. I think they were really introduced to him with the matches he played at this tournament last year when he beat Tsitsipas on Ash, and he returns this year. And did he play every single match on Ash? I think he did, didn't he? Mm.
Did he?
They've billed him here as a guy to watch, and I think the crowd have responded. And of course, the way he plays tennis, you know, he makes people that even don't really know who he is love him. And he's so fast, and it's like speed is such an easy thing to enjoy. You know, it's why the 100 meter sprint is so enticing as a spectacle. Who's the fastest? And Alcaraz, when he sprints, you can feel it in the crowd, the people getting excited that they're watching
breath,
this guy move so quickly
when he sets off.
Yeah. Is he gonna get there?
He has that quality that the best athletes in any sport have. And I mean, you know, a Usain Bolt type, when maybe he's left in the blocks, maybe he's made a poor start, but you know the surge is coming. Mm. And there is a sort of collective holding of the breath to see whether he's going to catch whoever it is on the line. And it's like that with Alcaraz setting off for a ball that is absurdly out of reach. And then suddenly he's just there. And the crowd go in waves, ever-increasing waves of noise and pitch as they react to it. And you can then see he's feeding off that. He loves all that, because the moment he reaches one and hits a winner and he gets that roar, he's got a way of celebrating that is so unobnoxious, you know, and appealing. And sometimes he'll put out his chin as if to say, "Did you see that?"
Yeah, and yet also completely self-aware. Like, he knows how good he is, but is somehow not obnoxious about that.
And single finger in the air.
Yeah,
the vibe is...
I can't believe I just did that. Can you believe it?
Did you see that?
Yeah.
It is extraordinary. I thought Casper Ruud did Casper Ruud tonight, really. And I know there were those spectacular moments that maybe you wouldn't expect, but he brings you a match. There was none of the Nadal sort of freezing in the headlights. He believed he could win, and he went out and he did his methodical best, with some sprinkling of spectacular in there as well.
He did, and I don't want to be too hard on Casper, because there's plenty of players that wouldn't have made it even close to a match tonight. But we've just... I watched that third set tiebreak live in the stadium, and we've just watched it again on TV. And that was very un-Casper Ruud. You know, as you said, he brings it. That's what he does. He doesn't give much away, and he gave that tiebreak away. Look, had he been more solid, Alcaraz might still have won with the spectacular, but make him produce the spectacular, at least make him go for it. I mean, we're talking, I think there were three shanks.
I found it quite similar to Jabeur in the tiebreak last night. She sort of stiffened up at the end of it. Mm. and that's what separates the player that wins these titles and the one that doesn't a lot of the time. And look at it, Świątek's got three of these things. Alcaraz is off and running, and those two have both got runner-up results. Both very creditable, and both, you know, they might get over the line. I think Jabeur will get over the line. I think Ruud might sort of squeeze one in somewhere if he keeps getting himself in a position, but...
Squeeze one in.
Well, do you know what I mean?
I mean, frankly, I think if Alcaraz stays...
Squeeze one in among all the Alcaraz women.
Yeah, if Alcaraz stays fit, everyone's just hoping to squeeze one in, frankly. Yeah. Greg Rozetsky, on our Prime Video coverage, who has played and lost a US Open final, thinks that Casper Ruud ought to and will... be having sleepless nights about that third set and the third set, about the set points and about the tiebreak.
Really?
And maybe that's necessary to make him better and hungrier. And, you know, Ruud's been characterised by always sort of when everybody else sort of pats him on the back and congratulates him for raising the bar a bit more, he goes, "No, I'm not done yet. I'm going to raise the bar a bit further." Mm. Sort of Cameron Norrie-like. So maybe that could be a good thing for him, but I think it's too simplistic to just go, "Oh, well, Alcaraz is better than everybody. Rude did well to make it a match today. I think that's true, but I also think there's room for Rude to have a few regrets in there.
Yeah, I agree. I think he played well. He did. He was a lot more comfortable than the Roland Garros final, where Nadal's his idol, and I think there was an element of happy to be there. Tonight, he believed, he played well, he just didn't execute in the key moment, which was the tiebreak.
And he does have a weakness on the backhand that no matter how much he seems to condition it to strengthen it, it can let him down.
It can, and it does. I think he's going to keep getting better, Rude. I don't know how good the backhand will get. I mean, I always remember Federer saying that he always thanked the tour, didn't he, for playing to his backhand because it made it better. And that might happen with Rude a bit. I also think he'll probably, he might improve his serve a bit more. And I just back him to incrementally get better, as he's done throughout his career. And this is the best tennis he's ever played on a hard court. It was a tougher run to the final, I would say, than what he had in Paris as well. It's a great, great week. And I don't know. I don't feel like Rude really lost this match. I just think it was just that tiebreak was a moment he will regret.
We're going to have to turn the TV off because we've now reached the stage of the replay on ESPN where they're showing the Alcaraz hugs. And I can't handle the Juan Carlos Ferrero hug again.
Yeah, oh, I've just witnessed it and I did. I've got a bit of a wobbly lip. And he's just hugged his brother and he's just sort of pulling at the back of his brother's hair in just joy and emotion.
He described him as a second father. Oh. In the interview that he gave to us on Prime, and just said, I wouldn't have any of this without Juan Carlos Ferrero, who incidentally became world number one himself, didn't he, in the US Open final 19 years ago. But
Despite losing
it, exactly. Mm. And Andy Roddick.
If you've never seen Juan Carlos Ferrero play, he was a really good player, and he was like a sort of version 1.0 of what Alcaraz is. He had the incredible fast arm and he was really quick around the court, and to think that Alcaraz is this much better than him. I mean, if you went back 20 years and had that conversation, I mean, look, maybe in 20 years time Alcaraz will be coaching somebody that's just taking it to another level, who knows. But that relationship is, how long have they been together? Basically since the start of his pro career?
Just
2018, I think.
Juan Carlos Ferrero saw Matt's tweet.
He said, oh, Montes will be here.
Yeah. I'll take a look.
Bye, Zverev.
I mean, they do seem very different characters to be coaching, let's be honest. I mean, but the bond between Alcaraz and Ferrero, it just seems to work. I mean, he's done a really good job with him, hasn't he?
If they ever split up, I won't take it well.
I mean, apart from the fact that obviously he's an immense talent and he's got to try to make him a better tennis player, he's made him a good pro already. To be a good pro at this age is...
And he might become even more useful to Carlos Alcaraz next year. Second season syndrome, target on his back. People figuring out his game and his weaknesses, PS, if there are any weaknesses, TBC on that front. Because Juan Carlos Ferrero is somebody that squeezed one in, isn't he, really? Yeah. Great player. He just managed to squeeze out a Grand Slam in between.
Well, before
eras.
Federer took over and Nadal took over. Mm. But you're right, between eras, because I have to say, when Ferrero came along, we thought this guy's going to be a serial winner.
Yeah.
And he reached two French Open finals. He had the really disappointing loss to Albert Costa that we often talk about. And then he won one. And then he reached the US Open final, which actually with his game was a heck of an achievement, really. Because it wasn't... Players didn't have the obvious ambition to do it on both clay and hard back then. They just didn't think that was doable, I didn't think, to the degree. I mean, I think Carlos Moya probably changed that viewpoint generally by reaching the Australian Open final in 96, I think it was. And that really came out of the blue. But, I mean, now you don't have many players who you just think clay quarter with zero ambition to do anything else. Nadal has changed that a lot. And Alcaraz, I mean, he's better on this than clay, isn't he? Do you think?
That's a really interesting one, because I was thinking today during the match, his drop shot really wasn't working today.
No, and he overused it.
He overused it, yeah. That was a real shot selection black spot.
Tired shot selection.
Yeah.
You could see the fatigue today, couldn't you?
Yeah. A tiny glimpse of it, the way I could see the northern lights. really pale haze, I mean, in the background.
Catherine, you didn't see the northern lights at all. And they said, oh, you did. Mm. Don't think
the people in charge of granting me a refund.
I'm sorry.
Definitely thought I saw the northern
what
lights.
What I saw out there today, particularly in the early parts of that third set, were tired shots. He then got a second.
Thank goodness.
He then got a second win.
He spent more time on court than anyone ever has to win a Grand Slam tournament since records began being kept.
That is astonishing, isn't it?
And the previous record was Nadal from earlier this year.
Of course it was.
Yeah, I mean I am glad that he feels tired, that he felt tired. But you could see there were some lackluster errors that you wouldn't normally see from him.
But on the drop shot thing, I mean, he's got the best drop shot in tennis. That was what, you know, you were saying about the net game. That I watched that same Rio final in 2019, and the drop shots just blew me away. I didn't know that I could be that excited by a drop shot, really. And I just remember being on the edge of my seat, sort of thinking, I hope he plays one in this point. and I think, when I think back to Madrid, you know, I was there for his whole title run in Madrid, courtside, watching up close. The drop shot is what sticks in the forefront of my mind about that run. It was just deadly.
It's devastating, isn't it?
The combination of the power, push you back, and then play a drop shot. Didn't even matter if it was a brilliant drop shot, because he'd pushed the opponent so far back with his brute force on the previous shot. But they invariably were brilliant drop shots. So he's got that incredible weapon on clay that is blunted on hard courts.
Because it bounces up, doesn't it? Actually, by the way, you know, early in the third set when I said I felt he was suffering this low in energy, I actually went out into the public area and there was quite a crowd around the big jumbotron with Mary Carrillo's commentary coming out.
That'd be why then.
Yeah, very loud. That's right. Very loud out of the speaker. So I went out to get a drink and I was keeping across it. And her co-commentator today, Jimmy Arias, said he's starting to telegraph that drop shot. Or more to the point, Casper Ruud is starting to read it. The moment that Alcaraz would kind of cock the wrist and you could see Ruud was already moving forwards.
And on the clay, that didn't matter so much.
They
were so devastating.
Touch is so good.
If you read it.
Yeah. Mm. And it was well disguised. When he's not played 3-5 set matches in 6 days, he's not tired and he's not telegraphing them.
I guess, is it because players are standing further back on the clay as well, perhaps?
Yeah,
there's more,
I guess so.
There's more room to hit the drop shots.
Just on the fatigue as well, which sounds like you saw more evidence of than I did, David. But I absolutely believe you, and I'm very reassured by the fact that Carlos Alcaraz might actually get tired
like the rest of us.
He
got a second wind, and then suddenly he was off again.
Yeah, because I felt he was getting a bit tired as well, and I was thinking, oh, he's coming to the net to shorten some points, maybe.
Exactly, that's what I thought. A bit of panic, really.
But at the same time, he was charging into the net, and that's a very explosive movement that you have to have energy for. It wasn't like he was just hanging at the back and going through the motions in rallies, which you might do if you're tired as well. He was still managing to bring energy to those points.
But which comes first? Does the charge give you the adrenaline? I mean, I wonder whether there's a bit of that. Mm.
I think he just wakes up in the morning charged with adrenaline. I bet he's one of those annoying people that
these people
is
get
raring to
out
go.
Of so annoying, isn't
so
it?
Annoying.
The alarm goes off. But he talked. I think he might have talked about it in his press conference, but Tim Hemman on our coverage had spoken to Juan Carlos Ferrero earlier on today, and he had made the pretty bold decision that on the days after his extremely late finishes, after his quarterfinal and semi-final, so on his off days, he didn't practice. Didn't practice at all. And that really
just had
is
gym
un-
sessions.
Yeah, just had gym sessions, and that really is unusual, I believe. And he also decided that despite the match starting at 4 p.m. tonight, they would come in at, I think they came in at 9:30, but that was arriving at 9:30 or getting the bus at 9:30. I don't know. They probably got a car. probably weren't on the media shuttle. But anyway.
Flagging
around
the bus.
I think it was so that it didn't feel that there was lots of sort of anxious waiting around for the day to start, you know, a way to calm the nerves and make the day feel more productive somehow. I don't know. Anyway, whatever the thinking behind the plan was, it worked. And that's, you know, there's lots of very clear arm around the shoulder stuff and game development that Juan Carlos Ferrero was doing with Carlos Alcaraz, but there's also, you know, those are some quite big calls, I think. Not practicing on days off, that's pretty bold managerial stuff.
Yeah,
that's,
I was trying to work out.
That's leaving Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench stuff.
When we were in England last year and we were having to sort of produce the podcast at about 4 a.m. and there were a couple of days where I went to breakfast at 6 before going to bed. You know, that's what he was up against, wasn't it?
What we needed was Juan Carlos Ferrero calling us up and saying, have the day off.
Have the day off.
Yeah.
That's right.
And have a hug.
You sleep in, Catherine.
Have a hug.
You sleep in. When you're ready, I'll be here to give you a hug.
Oh. Tell you what, I mean, this whiskey's going down well, by the way.
Do you know what percentage of his potential Ferrero thinks Alcaraz is at?
I was going to ask you that question. I really want to
know. I just read it from the press conference.
Stefanos Tsitsipas is not listening to the answer.
What is it?
Insert next gen a name here.
Oh, what is it?
60%.
Oh my God. And yet, that's about what I would have said.
Mm. And Ferrero thinks he can improve his return, his serve, his backhand, his consistency, especially mentally.
I would agree.
Yeah, I genuinely
would
agree with all
of those things. His mental consistency this tournament hasn't been brilliant. He's had lots of quite big lapses where he just sort of thinks he's playing an exhibition for a bit and stops concentrating on winning points.
I love the way that Ferrero isn't all hyped up and stressed in the match and demanding he do things a certain way. He seems to be one of these who's, look, I've prepared you. Go and sort yourself out. And then when you finish the match, I'll come back and I'll prepare you for the next one. And we'll build and we'll have an off season and all that.
It's so nurturing, isn't it?
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. I think Alcaraz likes that he's there during the match. He often looks to him. He often, you know, raises his voice a bit at him. But he, I don't think he expects anything back. And he doesn't get anything back. Ferrero just sort of grins at him. And I do think on those specific points, return, that has stood out to me. Like, he does miss some returns that you just think, well, you know, Novak Djokovic would make that on a big point, and he's missing maybe. And the serve, I've always thought he needs more free points on it, but actually in the fourth set today, he suddenly started getting it, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he hit about 7 aces in that set, loads of unreturned serves, and that was a glimpse of what that serve is capable of.
I think it really helped him that he because he squeezed out that third set, suddenly it seemed that he was either, right, I'm going to play really efficient, really aggressive tennis now and try and do this in four, or I'll outlast him with my Superman powers at the back of the court.
Lots of things being squeezed in and out this podcast.
Well,
That's what happens when David has whiskey.
Yeah, that's what happens when I have whiskey. And actually, I think it's what happens when you get two players who've never been on that stage before, and yet they handle themselves so much better than Alexander Zverev and Dominic Thiem did 2 years ago.
Yes, that final 2 years ago it gets an increasing hammering every time. Yeah. Every time we bring it up,
we're going to talk about it forever, aren't we?
And I mean, look, to be fair, they were playing in front of nobody, yeah. which is a real, mentally that must
it's
be such
so
a,
dystopian. Yeah. Although, watching it back,
yeah, I guess Osaka and Azarenka weren't in their first final, were they?
No.
Because, I mean, they managed,
and it was better quality.
It's just so not real tennis, is it, to be playing in front of no one? I mean, I'm like, I can't believe that happened still. Mind you, who can believe any of the things that happened over the last 2 years happened? But I think when I watch Alcaraz, I feel like I'm looking at things that I've never seen, no matter who it is before.
What are those things?
Not even Nadal. Not even Federer, not even Djokovic, not even Borg, not even McEnroe, none of them, Sampras. There's something, he's got something. That doesn't mean he's going to go and win double-digit Grand Slams or be as great as they were. But he has a quality, he has an ability that is something new. He's brought something new to the sport. I don't know whether it's going to be a successful new, because I think he actually needs to add structure to his game that he doesn't have at the moment, because he needs to win straightforward points and straightforward matches and not always be spectacular. But the spectacular level he has, speed off the mark, increasing velocity of shots, gasp-inducing explosiveness, that combination of speed and sheer brute power off a fast arm. Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just nothing like, I've never seen anything quite like that before.
We really need to enjoy the spectacular while it is spectacular. Like, I think he will always remain brilliant to watch, but we're in a sort of golden moment for it being completely spectacular before he's
untamed.
Built. Yeah, untamed. It's just raw. And yet,
so good.
And yet, it's still capable of winning a Grand Slam title.
He's won a Grand Slam at 60%. Amazing.
So, do you think as he exploits that remaining 40 or 35%? 40.
Yeah.
40%. He will become slightly not less spectacular in that the peaks won't be as high, but less prone to the spectacular. There'll be more repeatable ways of winning rallies.
I think so,
but I also think he has a little bit of that Federer showmanship in him.
Yes,
I think he does love a moment to just make the crowd go, wow.
Oh, I think in every Carlos Alcaraz match, you know, to come, there will be a spectacular shot, a spectacular moment, something you remember, in the same way that Federer has always done that. I just think he probably will rein it in a little bit in terms of, yeah, structure probably is the word. Just more structure to his game, more patterns, I suppose. I think he has got patterns. That kick serve is one, with the big followed up by the big forehand or a volley,
or the absolute charge to the net after the kick serve.
Yeah.
That one amuses me.
He's something else.
It's been some day, hasn't it?
Mm.
It really has. And actually, a very nice exchange between him and Iga Świątek on Twitter, actually. Where
I haven't seen that.
She congratulated him. He immediately replied and congratulated her and said how nice it was that they'd both won their first US Open title at the same time.
Oh, that's lovely.
And very, very much undertones of, we're going to win loads of these, aren't we? You and me.
Yeah, well, they are.
Well, they are.
There was, speaking of nice exchanges, there was also a good moment, I think it was in the first set, where Ruud gave Alcaraz the point.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that was fantastic.
After a double bounce that hadn't been called.
Glad you reminded me of that.
The umpire.
Because, Ruud he's so fast. He charged in to try and get this ball, and he scooped his racket underneath it. And you can't tell immediately from the side or from in real time. He knew, though. He knew. He immediately gave the point. And the way Alcaraz responded was just to applaud him and then point and like make sure that people in the stadium knew what Ruud had done, and applaud him from the far end several times, pointing and just getting the crowd to show their appreciation. And you know, I know we love aggro and all the rest of it, but I also love that. Just it's about making you feel things, isn't it? And Alcaraz makes me feel stuff all the time, the way he plays and the way he carries himself. And I don't know, I've got a real soft spot for Ruud too. I think the good thing is, a bloke like Alcaraz needs a foil. And Sinner's the ultimate foil, I would say, just at the moment, of players that are active. Because, you know, Nadal's in and out just at the moment, and Djokovic we haven't seen for a bit. But these guys, I think Alcaraz against any of them, Ruud, Sinner, Djokovic, Nadal, it's going to be really, really good the next couple of years before he utterly takes over.
So basically, Alcaraz against anybody is great.
So he doesn't need a foil. He just needs to be on the court.
No, I think there are some people. That what I mean. Some people I'm not so. I don't know whether I'd be that into him playing against big servers. Him against Maxime Cressy. I don't know whether that's going to work.
But, sounds like a match you would love, David.
But who against a big server would you get excited about?
I used to like big servers against Djokovic to see whether Djokovic could return them.
Right.
That's just me. Anyway, it's been quite a day. It's quite a day, and one we won't forget.
If we're throwing it forward, as we like to do, the last two US Opens in the men's have been won by non-Djokovic and Nadal players, Team Medvedev. And then obviously Nadal and Djokovic have come out at the start of the next year, and they've dominated Wimbledon and Roland Garros and the Australian Open as well. Does this feel different? Like, are we backing Alcaraz to win a slam again next year? Like,
yes.
I think I probably am.
Yes. But I thought Medvedev would win the Australian Open.
Right, I think I probably did as well.
Very nearly did.
It's pretty hard not to see somebody win the US Open and not think that they're going to win the Australian
Open.
Right,
that's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, because you have to feel like something would have to happen in the meantime to change things. I mean, obviously, so much depends on whether Djokovic will be in Melbourne.
I think watching Djokovic play against Alcaraz over the next 2 years is going to be the most intriguing sight in tennis.
Yes.
Yeah. I think you're right there.
Because you know Djokovic is just going to devote his life to being able to show he can still take this guy out.
Absolutely, and I'm keen for that as well. What does it do in the minds of the ones that were supposed to be the next gen? What does it do to Tsitsipas, Zverev, Rublev?
Well, I think he'd already put the frighteners on them back in the spring. And then there was that period where they just where he kind of started to struggle a little bit and become a bit erratic.
And he said he lost the joy. He was he was stressed. He was feeling pressure. And
has to be a chance of that happening again, really, with this pressure.
For sure, but they don't want to be. It's surely not a healthy attitude for them to think, oh well, I'll just stick around and hope he starts struggling.
I don't think they think like that. I think they rate themselves. I think Tsitsipas and Zverev and all these, they think that they can take this guy out. They think they can take anyone
out.
What
do we think?
Are they looking
to just try and squeeze one in now?
Honestly, if this guy plays to his potential, he's better than all of them.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
they're probably at more than 60%?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Their potentials?
Yeah, I would say Tsitsipas is probably at 85. I'd say Zverev's at 95. Really? 90 to 95% of what he can be. I mean, you know, that match he played against Nadal is probably the best tennis I've ever seen from him. Certainly at a Grand Slam pre-injury. But, you know, yeah, I think Juan Carlos has got it absolutely right. 60%. And he's just won the US Open. It's exciting to think about it. Who deserves the most credit? Is it Matt for picking Alcaraz in, when was it? What year? When he was 13?
2017.
Is it me who said that he would win the French Open this year and he kind of, two slams later, he did?
I think it's Catherine's brother.
Is it?
Well, I think it's Matt.
Why?
Well, we don't condone betting here on the Tennis Podcast. But
no, we don't take any betting sponsorship at all here.
Yeah, and my brother's not a big betting man, but he is a big Alcaraz man.
Yeah, and he made an exception.
And he put a tenner on Alcaraz to win the US Open on March the 18th.
Yeah.
At 25-1.
Pretty good.
And, of course, his reaction to that is to be very annoyed he didn't put more on.
Don't do that, kids. You only get one go at Alcaraz when he's 19.
Yes, absolutely.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription.
So I think that's about it for covering the men's singles final. We have had some other big matches today, other finals. Matt, who won the women's doubles final today?
That was Katerina Siniaková and Barbora Krejčíková. They are unbeaten in the slams this year. They've won three of them. They couldn't play Roland Garros because Krejčíková got COVID, but they won the Australian Open, they won Wimbledon, and now they've won the US Open as well. It's kind of amazing how Krejčíková has just gone back to being the best doubles player in the world. I mean, maybe her singles will come again, but certainly this year she's been that doubles player again that we always knew that she was.
That's the career golden slam for Siniaková and Krejčíková.
Yeah, and they're the only pair in women's doubles history to have won all four slams, Olympic gold, and the WTA finals. Individually, Pam Shriver and Gigi Fernandez have done it, but Siniaková and Krejčíková are the only pair to have done it, which
and
is
Venus
amazing.
And Venus and Serena?
I don't think they won the finals.
Oh, the finals as well, yeah. Just the four majors and the
yeah.
Olympic gold.
Yeah.
I saw Barbora Krejčíková and Katerina Siniaková come out onto our Thrash Stadium at about 9:30 this morning because I was finishing off my audio diary that's going to be out tomorrow for friends of the Tennis Podcast. And I mean, you know, they were going through this really intense practice session. It was hours before they were due to play. They're quite a team. But a word for their opponents, Katie McNally and particularly Taylor Townsend. I mean, they were a set and 4-2 up. And I mean, I thought they'd got it. I thought they were going to win it. But even though they didn't, I just think it's so great to see Taylor Townsend in a Grand Slam doubles final. You know, it's 10 years since she had the USTA, basically, when she was world number one junior, basically take away the chance of her having a wild card in that tournament as into the main draw. And also, for a while, they eventually reinstated, I believe, the funding for her to travel, but they took it away because they said she's not fit enough. And you've talked about it already, Catherine, over the course of the week with regards to the outfit she's been wearing and the sort of, you know, the middle finger that's given. And she just gave a speech afterwards, which was very straightforward and pointed about the fact that she has earned this place to be where she is. And it's just a great story to see her there doing what she should be doing, you know, and doing what she's capable of.
And handled herself today with in the speeches and presentations which was conducted and presented by Patrick McEnroe, who we've got a lot of time for, great commentator. He's been very generous with his time for us on Tennis Relived. But he was the head of the USTA when those pretty horrible decisions were made. She was body shamed and disrespected and damaged, really. I think that was pretty horrific what was done to her back then at a very formative age. And she was clearly conscious of that today during that speech. She didn't make a lot of eye contact, and she was delightful, but said a couple of quite pointed things about how much she has grinded. And P.S., that's since having a baby last year. 18 months ago.
Extraordinary.
She's still only 26 years of age. She has a heck of a career still to go, and she's clearly hungry. I think getting to play a final on the Arthur Ashe Stadium will make her even hungrier. And I'm such a fan of hers. She is a wonderful role model, and a very important reminder that fitness and health look very different on different people, and I love her.
Yeah, I love watching her as well. The way she makes you feel when she's playing the sport, you know, that technique she has, the way she marauds to the net, and she just I want to see that joy in her game because it makes me feel joyful watching her play. So, yeah, as you say, many years hopefully left. And she said 2023 is going to be a big year for me. And so can't wait.
I'm so here for that.
We're going to follow that with interest. What else happened today, Matt?
We had three wheelchair finals. In the men's singles, Alfie Hewitt finally beat Shingo Kaneda 7-6, 6-1, overturning that Wimbledon loss. So Kaneda falls one match short of the calendar slam for Hewitt. That's his sixth Grand Slam singles title and his third at the US Open, so really brilliant for him.
Kaneda was going for a 29th Grand Slam singles title today,
and he was going for the calendar year Grand Slam, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
unbelievable. Anyway, I think that's massive for Alfie Hewitt after serving for the match four times in Wimbledon. I said that on air earlier. And then afterwards thought, oh, I must have got that wrong. It cannot possibly have been four times.
Yeah.
And then losing the doubles final yesterday with Gordon Reid having served for the match. I think that was a big win for Alfie Hewitt.
Chuff for him.
Dida de Groot, however, did win the calendar Grand Slam for the second straight year.
Ridiculous.
She has won her last 65 matches.
No way.
129 of her last 134 sets.
Eat that, eager.
Yeah, that's a streak.
That's Esther Vigia getting on for that. Amazing.
Yeah. And then in the quad singles, Niels Vink beat Sam Schroeder 7-5, 6-3.
As you know, I have a soft spot for Niels Vink.
Niels on wheels.
Niels on wheels.
That's his website, is it? Amazing.
Big fan.
Oh, that's so good.
Seems a lovely chap and a great tennis player also, yeah. But Niels on wheels.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I mean, it's just been so good today. We've loved every minute of it. And that, folks, brings our US Open daily podcasts to an end for 2022, certainly on the main feed here. A few little thank yous I'd like to give to our US Open mascot, Phoebe, who's done a splendid job, don't you think, Catherine?
I mean, dogs do a splendid job just by existing, I think.
She cheers me up.
Yeah, but any opportunity to look at pictures of other people's dogs that I don't know is very welcome for me. So thank you, Phoebe.
Absolutely. And to all of our newsletter predictions opponents and supporters, Chris, Kyle, Paul, Richard, Sega, and also our year-round predictions rival, Essam. We've loved taking you all on. The final standings will be in our newsletter tomorrow.
Essam is partial to a Hail Mary.
Yeah,
that's what we've learned about Essam.
I always
this
enjoy
year.
When Essam's picks come in.
It was like, right, Kasparov today.
Yeah, I respect that. I very rarely go for Hail Marys, but I enjoy it when other people do.
I like that he's got a strategy and he sticks to it.
He does. Mm. And you know what? He's going to nail a couple of these and then suddenly we're going to find ourselves in his wake. But anyway, fantastic to have all of you with us. Yeah, get on the newsletter list if you're not already. The link to it is in our show notes. To Hannah for her brilliant work on Twitter. She makes us laugh, think. And she's just brilliant to work with, isn't she?
She is a gem. Mm.
Yeah.
Can't imagine Grand Slams without Hannah.
No.
They're the best.
Don't leave
she's
Hannah.
She's the best.
Right? And to Gorana for her to Gorana for her superb work designing our newsletter every day. To Sarah for doing pole vaults for me while I'm asleep. I've got staff doing pole vaults when you're asleep, so you can't like complain. It's good, isn't it?
Well, except she sends them through in the group chat, so I have it's frustrating anyway. Very talented woman, Sarah. I feel like she's wasted on that.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, we'll come up with some of the things for you to do, Sarah. Brilliant. Well, thank you all for your support. To Darwin, who's my year-round mascot. And Darwin, you're excellent. You deserve a better person to be sponsoring than me, quite honestly, because I'm rubbish at predictions most of the time. To Carter, who's Catherine's mascot.
I'm not allowed to disclose, am I, where I finished in the US Open predictions competition, but Carter, you will be
delighted.
For once, not hugely disappointed in me,
okay.
I don't think.
To the dearly departed Gerald and Gerald's owners, Daryl and Liz, for sponsoring Matt.
We're pretty happy. We've had a solid US Open.
He has an unassailable lead. To Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, of course, in just about every way, they're just the best, and they're also sponsoring Billie Jean the dog. To Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner, our top blokes and executive producers, they are indeed splendid, aren't they? Most splendid.
Nothing to add. Splendid blokes.
Absolutely. And to AO Travel for supporting us during the Australian Open. Don't forget to check out ozopentravel.com to see their amazing packages. You can create your own. They'll sort everything out for you all in one place. And don't forget, if you're a friend of the Tennis Podcast, you can enter our amazing competition. And for one final time, Matt, we have shout-out to the US Open. No, just US Open 2022. Okay.
We do. We have Alex King in Apple Valley, Minnesota.
Wow.
Apple Valley.
Yeah. Right, Alex.
And Alex also comes with bonus rescue dog Dottie, who would love a shout out as well. So there we go.
Hello, Dottie.
Amazing.
Like Hello, Dolly, but a little bit different. Do you have a picture of Dottie?
No.
No, okay.
I'm sure Alex can sort you out at some point. Who else we got?
We've also got Elspeth Dal. In Leeds.
I like the name Elspeth.
Yeah, very nice name.
Is that Scottish for Elizabeth?
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know. I've said that and now I'm not sure.
I mean, it's a lot like Elizabeth, for sure. And I do know a Scottish Elspeth. This Elspeth isn't from Scotland.
Currently in Leeds.
Currently. Right. Hello, Elspeth.
Right, Elspeth.
Sorry, I made that weird.
We're like weird here.
We've also got Trip Johnson, who is in Tennessee.
Trip is American.
Tennessee.
Trip is one of those names that can only be American.
Certainly couldn't be British. Mm. And that's to our detriment.
You might be Canadian.
Right, Trip.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Tennessee, home of the Titans.
Yes.
I'm seeing the Titans.
What's Trip's surname?
Johnson, as in
Trip
Steve.
Johnson. He could be a character in, you know, an American teen drama.
I think you're right. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Maybe he is.
Well, I don't know. But Trip has got a little story about how his tennis fandom started.
Oh, yeah.
It was saying it was all by chance. I was flipping through the channels and stumbled across Serena versus Kvitova in their 2012 Wimbledon quarterfinal match. Ever since then, I've kept up with every tournament from 250s right to
wow.
the slams.
Wow, Trip.
Mm, it's great, isn't
love
it?
Love it.
That's so excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in as Friends of the Tennis Podcast at the shout-out level. If you'd like a shout-out and to support the show generally, as well as getting access to our bonus podcast for friends, you can do that. The link to sign up is in our show notes, and there is a shout-out section of it along with the intros. So just choose whatever suits you, and that's available to you. And finally, we'd just like to wish a very happy birthday to Debbie Goldstein, who is a very loyal fan of the pod, and she's turned 50, so a huge happy birthday to Debbie.
Debbie, 50. Debbie, I don't know if you wanted a niche Alan Partridge gag for your birthday, but that is what you've got. Happy, happy birthday.
It's too niche for me.
Really? Oh, no. Tough crowd. Happy birthday, Debbie.
Happy birthday.
Look, that's it. That's it for the US Open. We'll be back with My Diary tomorrow for friends. We've got our review show to record. We've got our Q&A. And then we're going to go and have a rest. But it's been an absolute pleasure, a treat, a privilege to record these editions of the Tennis Podcast for you throughout the US Open. We hope you've enjoyed them. Thanks so much for listening, for getting in touch if you have been. We've really enjoyed it. And Catherine, thank you to you and to Matt for keeping me company. It's been lovely.
Likewise, I feel like you two have kept me company, but I suppose we all feel the same.
Yeah.
Let's go and have a Juan Carlos Ferrero hug.
Yeah. And another whiskey. Right. We'll see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.